Welcome back. To this day, mental illness carries a heavy stigma, even though it's a medical condition which is often treatable. 50 years ago, that stigma was even worse, and even worse still, the disease was schizophrenia. But at any given time, as many as 51 million people suffer from the mental illness worldwide. Barb Hawkins is one of those people. She grew up near Chicago, and once her illness set in during her early adult years, she became confined to her parents' home for decades. Her sister Margaret is 11 years younger and now a novelist. She decided to share her family's story in a book called After Schizophrenia, The Story of My Sister's Reawakening After 30 Years. Margaret says when Barb was young, there was no indication of mental illness.
No, not at all. In fact, she was the opposite of troubled. I mean, she was exceptional. She was charismatic and beautiful and talented and athletic and social. And, you know, she was one of those rare kids who appears to have it all.
She went to college and got married to an Iraqi. And you say, looking back, that's when you might have detected signs of mental illness. She was too independent to marry as she did.
It seems so looking back. I would never claim that anyone saw that then, although she exhibited some, you know, again, in retrospect, what seems like strange behavior. But she was very independent, and she was very, you know, she was kind of an early feminist or in that era. And suddenly she became, you know, very involved in this relationship, and they became engaged in this very formal, old-fashioned way. And certainly they loved each other. I don't mean to impugn that. But it was, you know, it didn't seem like the direction that she wanted to go.
Tell me about the man she married.
He was a lovely guy. I loved Kareem. His name was Kareem Shalal, Dr. Kareem. And he was an Iraqi graduate student when she met him in college. And then he went into a doctoral program, and they got married after that. And they lived in the States for 4 years, apparently very happily. I used to visit them. I was a kid, you know, and I'd save up my allowance and buy plane tickets and go down there. And to me, it looked like they had this kind of romantic life. And then when he got his doctorate, he got a job at the University of Basra as a professor and the head of the department there. And so they went over. But he was a very sweet, you know, almost kind of a nerdy guy, you know, just kind of her opposite. He had these thick glasses, and, you know, he always wore white shirts and black pants, and he did all the cooking. He was a very serious guy, and I think he loved her very much.
Did Barb like it in Iraq?
Well, at first, she wanted to be a writer. She was a writer, and at first she wrote us letters almost every day for a while, and then certainly every week we get these, you know, just these exuberant descriptive letters describing the people and the food and the, you know, just all these almost incomprehensible customs and traditions. And so she loved it at first. And she had all these schemes for making money. She was going to design clothes using Iraqi fabrics. And then after a while the letters changed and became very strange and mystical, and then just kind of hollow.
And then during a return visit one summer, your sister didn't recognize your parents.
Yeah, she didn't. It was shocking. I mean, it was like a horror movie, really. They went to pick her up at the airport, and she didn't recognize them. And she was just utterly changed. And she was speaking in different accents and saying very bizarre things. And she looked different, and we all knew then she was very ill.
Were you able to figure out what triggered the decline?
Well, of course, everyone thought her living in Iraq had triggered the decline. I mean, this was in the 1970s, before all the recent, you know, everything that's happened since. But still, everyone in the family assumed that she'd gone to this country and been abused as a woman, because the nature of the things she was saying had this content that was kind of violent, and that was, you know, an understandable assumption by everyone, notwithstanding the fact that Kareem was such a sweet guy. But it took a while for everybody to I think, kind of get to the place where we could understand that this was a disease and a condition that she harbored and that had come in, you know, come fully into place while she was overseas.
So what did you do? Was there a family meeting or anything like that?
Well, no, we didn't have that kind of family, Bob. We didn't have a family meeting. We had a family fight. That's kind of dramatic, not even. But we, you know, everybody was terribly worried, but we did not deal with it in any kind of organized or effective way, I would have to say. I mean, I was a teenager then. I was in college, and my parents were devastated, terrified, in denial, guilty, scared, you know, everything. But when it became apparent that she was so sick, they asked if she would like to go to a doctor, and she said no. And that was kind of the extent of the discussion. And every once in a while, they would broach that subject with her, and her response was always the same. So that's a long way of saying, no, we didn't really have a family meeting.
Did you know what it was?
I think we did. We didn't want to say it. We didn't want to name it. I started doing research right away, and I made an appointment with a psychiatrist, and I started reading things. And then later, I had a job in a library. This was a couple years later. And everything I read suggested to me that it was schizophrenia. And I think, collectively, we all came to understand that.
At that time, what would her treatment have been?
Well, very good question. And that's the answer to that is the reason my parents were reluctant to force her to go somewhere. The treatment, I don't know for certain, but a likely case, people have told me who were working in mental hospitals at the time, a likely case would have been that she would have been committed somewhere, at least for some indeterminate amount of time, and then put on medication, perhaps given shock therapy, put in a psychiatric ward. And the drugs in those days were not nearly as subtle as they are now. And so she's a tiny person physically, so, the thought of just zapping her out with all these intense drugs is just still kind of shocking to me. And, of course, many, many people receive that treatment. So it wasn't like there was some ideal alternative that they were resisting.
What is schizophrenia exactly?
Good question. I'm not a psychiatrist or a doctor, obviously, but as a layperson, my understanding is that it is a disease of the brain that has a strong chemical component. It's probably inherited. The tendency to it can be exacerbated by stress or trauma or circumstances. And so it tends to occur in families, but not always. It is not the result of bad parenting, or certainly not the result exclusively of bad parenting, which used to be the common belief. There used to be this thing called a schizophrenogenic mother, and there were books written about it. And cold mothers would produce schizophrenic children, and it was just all their fault. And so in addition to the sorrow of having this sick offspring, the parents had to carry this burden of guilt and shame for being such terrible parents. So we know now it's not that it's a disease. It's it's like having cancer, you know, except when you have cancer, people say, oh, I'm so sorry, what can I do? When somebody in the family has a mental illness, people tend to shy away.
Did you have a family history of it?
I don't know. Because of secrecy, because of shame, because of all these issues around stigma that I'm talking about, we didn't talk about those things. But there was a history of mental illness. You know, there was a suicide, and there were some other cases. But certainly, you know, it isn't like we said, well, you know, we have this family member who's schizophrenic, and so we have to, you know, anticipate this might be something that one of the children will have. Certainly there was never that kind of understanding.
Your father had nervous breakdowns?
My grandfather, actually. My father was a very resilient and self-contained guy. I think he had some problems, but he worked very, very hard at keeping them secret. But my grandfather had had quite open nervous breakdowns, and he, in fact, had been hospitalized a couple of times in mental hospitals and had received shock treatments. And those treatments did not help. Didn't help him, didn't help the family.
So there was a legitimate fear that the same thing would befall your sister, right?
Absolutely. There was a fear. My grandmother committed suicide, and so, you know, there was this dread. It's like, oh, no, here it comes again. But in a way that had this, you know, shame attached to it. And so rather than handling it and try to figure out some way to, you know, deal with it effectively this time, there was just kind of a duck and cover response.
Barb started to talk to herself, and your parents managed to take her to a psychiatrist, which must have been a big step for them.
It was a big step for them. It was really, really, you know, it's kind of poignant for me to think about how it must have been for them to do that, because they sure didn't want to, you know, and they, you know, they set out on this little trip. I mean, it was just an hour's drive, but it was a kind of journey for them. And they did, but she wouldn't go in. And so she stood outside in the hall, and they went into his office. And, yeah, and he just kind of shook his head and said, well, I think you're going to have to commit her. And they were not willing to do that.
Mention your father. You write of him, to explain my father's nature requires a split screen of the mind.
That's for sure. I mean, he was so sensitive and sweet and imaginative and playful and fun-loving, you know, and that was one part of his personality. It was certainly the part that he showed to the world, of course, but then he also had this very dark, angry side, and he was very fearful and very distrustful. And increasingly so, as he got older, I think he was angry about things that had happened in his life, and he wasn't really able to connect these two parts of his personality. And so I, you know, some people talk about parents and, you know, complicated relationships they had with a much loved but somewhat unknown and maybe feared parent, and they say, well, you know, I can see now, you know, the good and the bad and the light and the shadow and all that, and it all sort of coalesces into one beautiful, flawed person. And I can say that, but in truth, it, you know, that's not what I see when I look at him. In my memory, I see these opposite people, and both are true.
Split screen, you say, and some consider schizophrenia split personality.
Well, that's true, and I would never want to diagnose my dad, you know, from a distance. And you know, he's passed now, but and actually schizophrenia is not, you know, people tend to think of it as a double personality, but that's a little bit of a misnomer, because it isn't double, it's a fractured personality. But, you know, did my dad have some, you know, some problems? Maybe, I just don't know.
There were many things Margaret Hawkins and her family didn't know about schizophrenia before her sister developed the mental illness. We'll continue their story and what they learned after a break.